You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast, where we focus on the Bible and invite you to test what is taught in light of what the Scriptures teach.
Welcome to Season 10, Episode 7 of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soker. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about suffering as a Christian. Let's get started. In this series, we've been looking at the true grace of God, as Peter talked about it in 1 Peter 5 and verse 12. And we are looking at his first epistle that he wrote there to see what he had to say about the true grace of God. What is grace? Not as the world defines it, but as Peter, the apostle, defined it. And as we've gone through this series, we've talked about different things. And what we're going to talk about today is something that may be surprising, that Peter would include this in this idea of the true grace of God. But we're talking about suffering as a Christian. And we're going to be looking at some verses from chapter 3 and 4 of his letter for our episode today. We're going to start by looking at chapter 3. And as we go through all of these, what we're going to see here is that as we are potentially going to suffer for the cause of Christ, there are various reasons why we may suffer. So as we think about this, why we may suffer for the cause of Christ, the first thing we want to see here from chapter 3 is that we may suffer for teaching the truth. 1 Peter 3 in verses 13 through 15, he says, "Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation and do not be troubled, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." He starts by saying, who is there to harm you? Now, the question implies that there is someone who is posing a threat to harm you. Otherwise, he wouldn't even bring up this idea of who is there to harm you if there was no one who was offering a threat to them. But his point is, when he says, who is there to harm you, is that no matter who they are, they cannot compare with God. Jesus was the one who said in Matthew 10 and verse 28, "Do not fear those who kill the body but are unable to kill the soul, but instead fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Fear God, do not fear man." So who is there to harm you? No matter who you might add to that list, no matter who it might be that is threatening you, that is wanting to oppose you for teaching the truth, they are not God. They can't compare with God. And so we may be targeted. Well, why is it that we may be targeted? Well, he says here that who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? We may be targeted for being zealous for what is good. Those things that are good are those things that pertain to God. Every good thing comes from him, James 1:17 tells us. Every good thing is from God. If we are zealous for the things of God, then we may be targeted. If we follow after righteousness, as he said in the verse right before this, in verse 12, that the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. If we're righteous, and we're following that way of righteousness that he would talk about in 2 Peter 2:21, we're going to be different. So we're going to be targeted. And so as we are going to be noticed as being different, and people are going to oppose us, what it will often happen is what he says in verse 14, that we are going to be asked to give a defense for the hope that is in us. Give a reason for why we have the hope that we do. This involves teaching. And so we may suffer for what we teach. But he begins that verse in verse 15 by saying, sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart. If we are going to give a defense, if we are going to explain why we believe what we believe, Christ has to be sanctified as Lord in our heart. He is the one with all authority, as he said in Matthew 28:18. We have the responsibility to speak as the oracles of God, as Peter said in 1 Peter 4:11. speak those things that are right, that are authorized by him, that are approved by him. Speak as the oracles of God, and do this, as Peter said, with gentleness and reverence. We are trying to lead people to the truth. But whether they come to the truth or not, there are going to be others who will oppose us for what we teach. So we may suffer for teaching the truth. Then he goes on and says in verses 16 and 17 of chapter 3, he says, keep a good conscience, so that in the thing in which they slant you will be slandered. Those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. For it is better if God should will it so that you should suffer for doing what is right rather than for doing what is wrong. We may suffer for doing what is right. When we face opposition for what we've just talked about, for teaching the truth, it's not always going to come in the form of arguments. There may be times where people will want to oppose us because they do not like what we teach. But if we're teaching the truth, and truth is able to stand on its own, truth does not need to fear controversy or opposition. If we are teaching the truth, there may come a point where our opponents, those who don't like the truth, those who don't want to accept the truth, they're not going to argue with the truth anymore because they know they can't argue with the truth. So what they're going to do then is result to personal attacks. They're going to attack us rather than attack what we are teaching because they can't answer what we're teaching because it's the truth. And so when we think about this idea, and we see this in every realm in our lives as far as different debates and different arguments and different controversies that happen, whether it's in religion or in politics, or it could be in your career, in your work, whatever it is, when you have an individual or a group who cannot answer, they cannot cope with the argument that's being put forth by another person or group, what they'll do then is resort to personal attacks. And so what Peter says here, he says, keep a good conscience. Make sure your conscience, that one that is trained by the word of God, that word that you are teaching when you're teaching the truth, keep a good conscience. Make sure you are doing what is good, because you are going to be attacked. You are going to be slandered. They're going to try to revile you. You need to act in such a way that when they do that, they will be put to shame. As it says there in verse 16, they revile your good behavior, they will be put to shame. Not you, because you're not being a hypocrite. You don't have sin in your life. We have to be consistent in doing what is right. They are the ones who are to be put to shame. Now, hopefully we'll be able to win them over. Peter talked about this in chapter 2 and verse 12. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, here you have people slandering you, trying to accuse you as being an evildoer. It says they may, because of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. They may be won over. Now, there we may not win them over, but even if we don't, we may be able to help others see the truth. So we may suffer, we may be attacked, but we have to be doing what is right. Then over in chapter 4, in the next chapter, Peter talked about the suffering that we may have to endure because we give up sin. Chapter 4 and verse 1, it says, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lusts, drunkenness, carousings, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached, even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. We have, as Peter explained here, the same purpose as Christ. Arm yourself with the same purpose. We are to follow his example, as Peter talked about in chapter 2, verses 21 and 22. He committed no sin. We follow his example. And he says here that you are to live the rest of your time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. From this day forward, we are to be obedient children, as he said in chapter 1 and verse 14. We are not to be conformed to our former lusts. And some of those sins are listed here in verse 3, where he talks about sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousings, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. He says in verse 3, the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried these things out. The time past before you obeyed the gospel, before you became a Christian, you can't go back and undo those things. Those things are in the past. The time was sufficient for that. You don't need to go back to them. Those are in the past. They need to stay in the past. And as we leave those in the past and we arm ourselves with the same purpose as Christ to avoid sin, to keep from sin, others are going to notice. We are going to be seen as different from the world. And so what Peter says here, there's going to be some, particularly the ones who you used to run with, the ones who used to know you and hang out with you and engage in these sins with you. Well, now you're not doing that anymore. And so Peter says there in verse 4, they will malign you. Your obedience to God and your change of life causes them to look bad. Maybe they have a guilty conscience. Maybe they don't want to be seen as one who is still engaging in those things while you've given that up, but they don't want to reform. They don't want to change. They will malign you. Now, Peter says here, they will be judged by God. In verse 5, they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. They will be judged. This is why the gospel was preached, so that people will be convicted of their sin, that they could move from death into life. But until they do that, they may attack the ones who used to run with them, who've now given that up. And so as Christians, we've given up sin. We may be targeted because of that. We may be attacked because of that, because we're not doing what we did before. And then in chapter 4 and verse 12, he says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name." When Peter talked about this fiery ordeal among you, he says, don't be surprised at this. There are other warnings in the New Testament about the fact that those who desire to live godly in this life will be persecuted, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. Other passages also talk about this. Don't be surprised when this happens. He says there that if you are reviled in verse 14 for the name of Christ, you are blessed. But that's the key. It has to be for the name of Christ, not because we're suffering as an evildoer. He says in verse 15, make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or troublesome meddler. Suffer, if you're going to suffer, as a Christian. When you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but glorify God in this name. Don't be ashamed of that. Don't try to compromise so that you can avoid the suffering. Glorify God in this name. Remember what he says in verse 13. We, when we suffer, share the sufferings of Christ. He suffered for us. He was willing to give his life and die on the cross for us. When we obeyed the gospel, we conformed to the death and burial and resurrection of Christ when we died to sin, were buried in the waters of baptism, and then raised to walk in newness of life. Paul talked about that in Romans chapter 6. This is why Peter said in chapter 3 and verse 21, corresponding to that, baptism now saves you. Not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. If we are going to suffer, we need to be suffering as a Christian. We've made that commitment that we're going to follow him. He was willing to suffer and die for us. Suffer as a Christian. And we share the sufferings of Christ as keep on rejoicing. We are blessed if we suffer as a Christian. So when we think about what Peter is writing here, all of this is under the heading of the subject of grace. And so suffering may not seem like it fits, yet Peter talked about it. The reason why this fits with the grace of God is because we're suffering as a Christian. By the grace of God, we have the opportunity to follow Christ, to be saved by Christ. And so we have that opportunity. And it's just momentary light affliction, as Paul talked about in 2 Corinthians 4, that we suffer these things. So we have to understand what it is that we are committing to. Count the cost, as Jesus talked about in Luke 14, and make the decision that we are willing to suffer for Christ so that we can receive the reward that he promises us. So there may be different times and different reasons why we are going to suffer, but we need to make sure we're suffering as a Christian for teaching the truth, for doing what is right, for giving up sin, for being like Christ. Suffer for those things, not for the sins of the world.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please visit plainbibleteaching.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching weekly newsletter. This free newsletter contains articles, audio, sermon outlines, current events, and more. Also, if you found this episode to be helpful, please share it with others.
I want to thank you for your patience over the last 2 weeks. We didn't have episodes posted the last 2 weeks. The reason for that was I had some computer trouble. My computer was in the shop, and I was not able to record the episodes or post those. So that's why we didn't have the episodes the last 2 weeks. But I thank you for sticking with us, and hopefully we'll be back in our regular schedule as normal. The lessons in this season are based on a sermon series I just recently preached at the Eastside Church of Christ in Morgantown, Kentucky. And if you'd like to hear the sermon that goes along with this episode, or that this episode is based on, it goes into a little bit more depth. It's about 20 minutes longer than what this episode is. The link is going to be available in the show notes, so you can check that out. Also, I wanted to let you know that I have a new book available. It's called The Way, What It Means to Be a Disciple of Jesus. You can get that from the Gospel Armory online store. You can visit store.gospelarmory.com. There'll also be a link in the show notes if you want to check that out. That book is a short book about discipleship, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. It'll be good for Christians to be reminded of, for new Christians, for people in the community that you may want to reach. That's what it's geared for. And that book is on sale through the end of the month for less than $5, so you can check that out. Next week, we're going to be talking about resisting the devil. Until then, I hope you have a great week.